This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. Carl Andrews has been a longtime friend. We first met many years ago, I think in the early 80s, in the Fechter's Finger Flicking Frolic in Buffalo, New York, or actually just outside there at the Forks Hotel in Tonawanda, New York. Anyhow, he had shown me a few rubber band tricks that were new to me at the time, and then continued to attend each year to the convention, and we continued our friendship. And then he opened a restaurant called Illusions in Carmel, Indiana, which was just outside Indianapolis. It became a relatively famous type of venue for magicians to work, and had a lot of great guys who came through and worked there, like Michael Close, of course, many of you know, and then also Chris Kenner, who many of you know, and Homer Luwag, and it goes on and on. It's kind of amazing, all the talent that was there. Well, he moved from there then, after that closed, over to Hawaii, and worked on Maui for a long number of years in restaurants over there and other professional venues, working in corporate shows and the like, and was quite successful. I recently did a podcast with Curtis Cam, and he was talking about how good that Carl is and how well he did there in Maui. But anyhow, he has recently moved back to the continental U.S., to the Carolinas, where he is caring for a father who is ill. But he has also worked cruise ships and other kinds of venues, and during the time that he was on some cruise ships, he had some time to work on some apps, which is another direction that he has gone. And I, first of all, want to recommend that if you happen to use music in your show, then you should check out Show Cues. It's available through the App Store. I believe it's available just for Apple, like iPhones and your iPad, but it's well worth it. If you don't use music in your show, then why not? I think it's important that you have a good introduction, and it should be taped. It should be something that is recorded, because that it puts you just a little bit above your competitors. It gives so much more, at least 10% or more, and you need to differentiate yourself from the others. And this would be something that can break you out from the pack by having some music with you, and particularly if you have something that's going to be recorded. A lot of times, whenever that you hand your host a piece of paper to say, here's how I'd like to be introduced, or you send them some information in advance and they put together something and they read it, sometimes they might and sometimes they might not, or they might mispronounce your name, or they might lose the paper altogether, or decide not to read that and just kind of improvise and then say, let's bring out the magician. Here's that guy. He's really going to fool you, and not even mention your name. So it's important that you have something that's recorded, and so that's just part of the reason why you should be using music. But again, the show cues is something that I would highly recommend. For a long number of years, I had used Kerry Pollack's Show Tech, which was awesome in its time, but they really don't make many discs anymore. And then whenever that changed to digital with the flash drives and the laptop, that's great. So that's brought it up into the century, and I would also recommend ShowTech, which is very good. But for me, the ShowQue seems to be very compact. It can go right there on my laptop, or rather on my iPad, and I can see it, and it works fantastic for me. Anyhow, I'm just promoting it because I use it. Same thing like with all of Carl's products. He has a book and some DVDs. I would recommend any and all of those, because if you work any kind of restaurants, if you do a strolling environment for a corporate or hospitality suites, or if you just do magic at a bar, or you just like to perform magic in general in close-up, he has really great ideas, and these are solid workers' ideas. You might recall from Michael Close's Worker series, that's what that was about, was for workers. And that's what Carl teaches also in his notes and in his book and DVDs and everything else. Some of you might look at this at first blush and think, well, that's nothing new, that's nothing sophisticated. Well, don't overlook how strong it really is. He has some great advice. And so I just saying this because I like it, I use it. I had purchased it long before Carl had come through Houston and we recorded this podcast, because he's been a friend, and plus he has developed some really great stuff. So he's not promoting me nor paying me for any advertising. Again, all of the funds really come directly from you who are friends of the Magic Word and those who donate. And so I would recommend that if you like the podcast, please consider donating a few bucks if you can on a one-time basis, or if you can go a little bit longer and pledge a monthly amount, then that would be great also. And you could become a friend of the Magic Word by just clicking on the tab there over to the left side of the page on themagicwordpodcast.com. Well, I have talked enough, and I think it's about time for our guest to have his say in all of this. And so let me also say that you should wait until the end, because there will be a prize giveaway, thanks to Carl, that he's got a few DVDs that he had left with me and said that I can offer these to listeners. And we'll talk about those on the backside of this podcast. So I'm going to step out of the way over here and introduce my friend and soon to be your friend, Mr. Carl Andrews, here on the Magic Word Podcast. Hello, this is Scott Wells for themagicwordpodcast.com, and it gives me great pleasure to say aloha to my friend that I haven't seen in a long time, Carl Andrews. Hey there, Carl.
Aloha, Scott.
So you have been actually living in Hawaii for how many years? It must be, what, 40?
No.
Seems like it, maybe.
I was there for 8 years. Actually, a few years ago, moved back to North Carolina because my dad just turned 90, and I live 3 minutes away. I help him out when I take him to the store, the doctor's appointments, and all that. So
right.
I'd like to go back to Maui one day, but for now, North Carolina.
That's your home. Because you were in Ohio for a while, in Carmel?
Indianapolis. Okay. Carmel is a suburb of Indianapolis, and that's where I was, yeah.
And way back then, that's when you'd work with Mike Close and some of the... Tell me about Illusions, that place that had existed so many years ago and when it was popular.
Well, it was in the late 80s, 1988, that we opened it. And we brought a lot of people in as guest magicians, and we had a local staff of magicians, and Chris Moore had done Magic Moments in Sarasota, Florida.
Okay.
And he was running a restaurant, just a regular restaurant in Indianapolis, and we had met. And we had both talked about the idea of doing a magic-themed restaurant, and so that became Illusions, and our wives decorated and put the whole idea together, and we came up with the sword, pulling it out of the stone to get in the
door. Oh, really?
And, yeah.
Okay. Well, it's kind of like at the Magic Island. You know, they used to have a big cobra. It was this big brass thing on a stone thing, and when you would check in, they would give you a card, which basically then you would charge that card to whatever thing that you wanted to buy for the rest of the evening. But you had to put the card in the snake's mouth, and then the stone door would open, and you go back into there. So
yeah.
You had to pull a sword out of a stone.
Yeah, you walk in, and you're almost like in this cave or forest kind of a looking thing. And when you get to the end, it's a dead end, but there's a sword sticking out of the stone with a little... a plaque that tells you in order to get entrance, you have to be able to remove the sword from the stone. So they pull it, and that opened up the wall, and they walked in.
That reminds me, there was a place, oh goodness, where is this? I want to say it's in Ohio or Michigan. It doesn't matter. It's kind of a spy place. I think it's called a spy bar or something, but when you go into the ante room, after you've paid your money or saying, I'm going to go in, there's a small lobby, if you will. And in order for the door to open, there is a sign or something that says you're going to have to, everybody here is going to have to sing Jingle Bells, or you're going to have to twirl around three times or do something, you know, or do jumping jacks. I mean, each person, each group apparently is different. So they wait and they put groups together. So in other words, if it's just you and me, they'll wait until there are a few more people. Right.
Yeah.
So then after the door opens and you go inside, you see people sitting at the bar and they're watching a television screen.
That's funny.
Everybody that's just been doing all this silly stuff.
I like that. That's funny. I think that's great. I think I'd like to see if I was going to do it now. I think the idea of you get them in there and they have to solve a riddle.
That's good.
And then once they solve the riddle, it tells them how to get in.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that would be kind of cool as well.
Yeah, almost like a...
treasure hunt.
Treasure hunt, of a way. Yeah, that you're going to have to...
But you get a group like you were talking about, it'd be kind of cool because you're meeting people, because between all of you, you have to try and figure this out.
Right.
I think that's a fun idea.
Yeah. So once that you had pulled the sword from the stone, then a door would open or trees would
part? Yeah, the wall opened. You're like in a cave thing, and it would just open up and you'd walk and you'd be in a restaurant, a nice restaurant.
Yeah.
That's kind of weird. You're like step into time.
Yeah.
And then the rooms were clubs, hearts, spades, and diamonds. And you'd sit in one of the rooms. Mm-hmm. The menu was magical. The waiters would make it appear out of a change bag. And then a magician would come by to your table. And I had named all the menu items magical names. The Copperfield's Catch might be the fish, and everything had a different name. And then in the lounge, we would do a close-up show, so you could see a magician at the table. Then after that, you'd go into the lounge, and there'd be a show. It was a small showroom right there at the bar. And so if you wanted, you could get
more magic.
You mean
like bar magic? You mean like Doc Hazen kind of a thing?
No, there was actually a little stage area in the lounge, and there'd be just a close-up table, and the people would come in and sit and just kind of like a close-up room with the castle kind of thing, without the tiered seating. But yeah, it was pretty cool. But that was a long time ago.
And how many years did that last?
I was gone during that first year. It kept going maybe another 5 years, I think, after that. It's been closed for some time.
Mm-hmm, yeah. I want to say it closed like around 90.
Sold it to, I think, one of the people that he had running it at the time. And then she didn't do so well. And so anyway, eventually closed. But a lot of the people had come through there, went on to do a lot of other things.
Mike Close. I knew that Mike had worked
there. Mike Close, Chris Kenner, Homer Leeweg. There was a lot of people there. And then we had guests come in, like Eugene had come down, and Charles Green was, he was at the time. So, yeah, it was kind of cool. It was a fun thing to do. It was something I thought I wanted to do. Having done it, I realized I was wrong.
Well, you wouldn't have known until you tried it.
You got to try it, because now at least I've got that out of my system.
Check that off the bucket
list. Exactly. That's gone.
So why did you decide that was not the thing? I mean, was there something that could have been done differently that would have made that more successful, that you would have been excited and still been working
Probably.
On it now? Or did you learn?
I think it was going into business with the wrong person.
It's a big difference.
It's sure. huge. You know, the person who was supposed to be the silent partner was anything but silent. Mm-hmm. Showing up all the time, his friends coming in to eat free, and deciding to sing in the bar. he's not silent at all. You know, it was just too much. So I probably would have tried to raise the money on my own without having a silent investor. And he was just the wrong one. So it just didn't work out. Personalities conflict.
Was it someone who had been a friend before, and you thought, well,
I had met him. I was working at a Holiday Inn doing the magic at a Sunday brunch, and he came in with his family one time, and they really liked it, so he hired me to do the Christmas party for his company, and then a few more parties, and then occasionally he'd just be out at a bar with some business friends, and he'd call me at my house, and he'd say, hey, I'm at this bar with these guys, can you come over and
do some magic for me? Yeah, basically.
So, and we'd got to talking, so I'm at a party with a bunch of doctors and business people, and he's there as well, and he knows the guy whose house it is, so they're good friends. But so these guys are all there, and they say, well, what do you want to do, like, what do you see yourself doing 5 or 10 years? I said, well, I'd kind of like to have a magical theme restaurant. That's always been in the back of my mind. And they say, no, we have an investment club, and you should talk to us about that, we'd be interested. So the other guy that I went working with, he walks me out after I'm leaving the party, and he says, you know, instead of going with those guys, you ought to let me talk to my brother and sister and see if we can do this. So I probably would have been better off going with the other guys, but I decided to, you know, go with him. And then
who would have known?
Didn't know.
So
it's a learning lesson.
Well, so you had a bad experience. That doesn't mean necessarily that you wouldn't do it again. It's just that you have some lessons learned, perhaps, of how you would go about doing what worked and didn't work.
In the right circumstances,
Because that's something here in Houston, since the Magic Island closed in 2008, that a lot of people have talked about trying to resuscitate that, because it has proven itself after 25 years, certainly, that there is a market here, this being the third or fourth largest city in the country, that we can sustain that kind of entertainment, and people like it, and it was a profitable thing for as long as it went, and again, it was the hurricane that caused the problem. But the thing is that building probably isn't something that can be refurbished. It probably is just a tear-down facility, since it's been so long since it's been closed, and all the mildew and whatever else in there, and the kitchen need to be redone and everything. But I just think that, again, that it reminds me that years ago, when we used to have video stores, that there was a video store in my neighborhood that had closed down. And somebody later, I mean, like overnight, I mean, apparently they went bankrupt, and they just kind of, if you were taking back a video, there was no place to take it. So you basically got that for free.
Free
they
video.
Didn't, yeah, that was the upside of that. But someone else was telling me, you know, we probably, like a buddy like you would have said, you know, we should have gone over and opened another video store, because the path was already beat to the place.
Right.
People knew where it was. They were used to using it. So someone else had already done the legwork, and you just need to have a different
right.
business model, you know. So that's what I'm saying about a magic restaurant that has been successful here, and it was there too. And I think there are certain places around the country I'm seeing now that there are a few restaurants that feature magic, but not many that would have magic as the main theme. In fact, I can't think of any necessarily. I'm sure there must be some.
No. I mean, Shillian's was in Chicago as a magical themed restaurant.
Sure.
But yeah, you don't see a whole lot just magical themed restaurants. I think more popular today is like Steve Cohen does in New York.
Chamber Magic, yeah.
Chamber Magic. And Kevin King and I had done that years and years ago in Indiana.
We
had three different ones. We had one in Brown County, and it had one in Indianapolis. I actually did one in Maui as well. But we did it years before that, and we just went to a hotel. They had a room they weren't using.
Mm-hmm.
We talked them into giving us that room, and we would do shows and take the door, and they would sell drinks and make the money on the drinks. The room they weren't using, they said yes. So then we went to Brown County, and we did the same thing. Talked them into just giving us a room. And
in a hotel, you said?
In a hotel.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So we had no overhead at all,
right?
And we would just take the door. And then the hotel let us come in because they had a cocktail hour every day at the, I think it was a Radisson? I don't remember, but it was a hotel in Indianapolis at Keystone of the Crossing, a popular area. They had a free cocktail hour for anyone staying at the hotel every night. So we would come in at the cocktail hour, walk around, you know, for free and just tell them about the show.
Yeah, to kind of excite people, saying, oh, this is cool, we're going to see more. Yeah,
And it worked really, really well. Mm-hmm. So we would, I forget what we sat, maybe 30 or 40 people. It wasn't a large room, but we had tiered seating because we had stools, you know, in the back. And then Kevin and I could do other gigs because we just had to have one of us show up that night. So we would take turns, and then if somebody had a show, the other one would be at the theater. And then the same thing with Brown County, which was a resort little town in Indiana. And then in Maui, when I got there, I went to a hotel and did the same thing. There was a room there, and I saw it wasn't really being used that much. Same deal. They give me the room. They sell the drinks. Maybe some promotions with cross promotion with the restaurant because they have a restaurant. And it worked real well because it's a turnover. It's a tourist hotel. And so you always have a new influx of customers.
Sure.
And because we only sat, like, I remember it was somewhere between 30 and 50 people. It was a little bit bigger room than Indiana. But and the hotel held, I forget, maybe 1,000 people. So you only needed to get, you know, just a small percentage of people to come to your show. So I handed out flyers that I had printed up, and the hotel would put them in every room. So if you didn't see a sign in the lobby, because we had a sign there as well, you'd at least have something in your room telling you about the show, a little bit about the performer, and where to get tickets and so forth. So I also had the hotel take the reservations. I'd make a little reservation
book. Oh, that's smart.
Yeah. So when someone called to make a reservation, the person at the hotel just brought out my reservation book, made all the reservations. I'd get there early that evening, pick up the reservation book, take it to the front door, and have somebody collect the money as people came in and check off the reservations. So I didn't have to have like a number for them to call. Everything was done right at the hotel, which makes it look a little bit more polished. Like, you know, it's part
something
of the
as
hotel.
A service that they offer, sure.
So I did that as well. But yeah, Steve has taken it to another level by going to the Waldorf.
Right.
And he's got a great gig there. So I think if I was doing it again, I would lean toward that style rather than a restaurant. There's less headaches, no food and beverage to worry about. It's just you have a room, you sell tickets, you do a show. It's real simple.
Well, there are several people who have theaters. And speaking of Indianapolis, I think that Christian and Catalina Painter have something, I believe, going on in Indianapolis, I believe. There are others who have some hotels or banquet rooms or other areas, that, like Wizards, for an example, you know, has its own in Florida. And there are a few others, and I have featured those, some of those on the podcast over here in the past. So I know that there are a lot of people who have kind of found that model, but I think Steve is the only one who seems to have succeeded in reaching a particular level of people. Now, it seems to me, though, with Hawaii, that you do have a certain clientele at a certain financial level, I guess, that they're going to be able to
afford it. Yeah.
If they can afford to be there, they can probably afford a higher price show.
Absolutely.
And so I would think it'd be kind of easy to find something like what you're talking about.
It worked well when I was there.
Yeah.
I had a good time doing it. And if I went back, I'd be the first thing I'd probably look into doing instead of finding a hotel. That hotel has since sold a couple times, but because then you have to deal with the new people who may or may not
want
to give you that room. I've seen where people have actually rented a hotel room at a hotel and then put on a show there. So it's another opportunity if you can't work out a deal to get one.
Well, that's exactly what my business partner, Jamie Salinas, and I had done. We formed a company called Top Talent Productions. Again, after the Magic Island closed, we knew that there were a lot of people who still had a hunger to see magic. And so we started to do that very thing, is each month or two that we would have magicians from either locally or from outside who would come, and we would arrange to get the one of the banquet rooms at a hotel in the middle of downtown. It was a very nice hotel, upscale hotel, probably a 3-4 star hotel, but it was not something that they would work with us like your hotel did with them. And because we kept telling them, why don't you have a weekend package deal that would include a dinner and a show, and you have breakfast, and then you get a discounted rate for the hotel for a night or something, because even local people would come in for a Saturday night to see the show. Or if you could slide something under the doors to tell people the show's tonight or whatever, and also set up the bar. But no, it seems they were charging us for everything, for whatever the drinks were and et cetera. They just didn't. Yeah. It was difficult. You got to find. I think it has to do with the manager, and you got a good point then too. Then Carl, when people are working with you now, and you go back later, there's a different group of people, and they may say, "Nah, that's not going to work for us."
Right.
It's entirely up to the individual.
You know? Well, some managers might go, maybe they don't care for magic, and they
went,
and the whole thought of it is like, nah, we don't want that. Our hotel's a little too classy for
that.
Yeah,
exactly.
So you have to deal with that. So you have to find the right hotel and the right person and hope they hang around long enough that you can get it established.
Well, the thing, of course, with Warren and Annabelle, so it's been a very successful model, and that's on Maui?
Maui,
okay.
On the west side.
And is that where you were? You were on Maui?
I was on the south side of Maui, but it's on the
west
side.
On the same island?
Yeah, on the same island.
Okay. And from what I understand, that's like the number one tourist attraction on Yelp or something. I mean, he's
done certainly one of them. They've done really, really well. He's got the Irma thing going, with the piano and a cocktail room where you sit, listen to the piano, and sometimes they do some close-up magic there. You order hors d'oeuvres, or as they call them in Maui, poo-poos, and then you go into the room where the show is. It's well laid out, and it's been well marketed, and it's one of the only things, going if you don't want a luau or,
Polynesian
show. Mm-hmm. Instead, you got Warren and Annabelle. So
right. But his is not a hotel. Is that a standalone facility?
Standalone facility,
okay.
Yeah.
Was it built as that, or was
that something it's in the only thing comparable would be like a strip mall, and it's just one of the buildings next to other shops, and there are other restaurants in the area and so forth. So they made some changes because they do have an area where you come in, and I remember it was like a small room, and you came in with a group of people. But I don't remember what you had to do to get in. There weren't monitors where people were looking at you. There wasn't any of the things we were talking about. But I remember there was something about figuring out how to get in. And that just now came back to me, which may have been why I was thinking about that earlier. And it was nice and it's well done. So little modifications. The theater was probably built. It's more like the tomfoolery where Tom performed behind a bar.
Sure.
He has a really long bar.
Right.
And then the seating is tiered. So he's really pretty much doing like bar magic like
Correct.
Tom did at the tomfoolery. It's done really, really well. And he has some Dana Daniels and some other people that come
right.
in.
Right, yeah, John Chirac, I know, goes and fills in. So you were on the other side of the island. How long does it take then to get around the island from one end to the other?
From where I was on the south side to the west side, it's about 45 minutes if you don't have traffic. In Maui, there's really only one way to get there. So if there's any kind of traffic or an accident or something,
it can be delayed. Factor that in. Yeah.
Yeah. So, on a good day, 45 minutes.
But you could, you really don't want to replicate something that a success plan that someone else already has laid out, particularly in the same area so close, would you?
I think what happens in Maui is Wailea, which is where I was, that area, even though 45 minutes away, pretty much the people that came to Maui for a lot of the time just stayed in that area, whereas the people on the west side kind of stayed on the west side because they both have everything you need. There's no real reason to leave and go all the way to the other side of the island for a show.
Sure.
So I think you could have one in Wailea and do just as well. It's actually a more expensive area even. The most expensive hotel on the island is right there. I used to perform there. So, I think the two would run fine and both continue to do well just because people on this side will go to the show here and people on this side will go to the show here. I've seen where people left the south side and went to the west side and a road had an accident or something and they just couldn't get back, so they just stayed the night over there. So
exactly.
So this way they'd be able to, you know, because I did have the hotel on this side, although I was really leaving about the time shortly after he got there. So there wasn't really both, we weren't going on at the same time. I think he was coming out, scouting out the place, maybe starting to do a little construction on it to set it up when I was doing this hotel. So I don't think they were actually running at the same time, but I think they could.
Yeah, so you had yours going before Warren and Annables had opened up over there.
Yeah, I had been there 8 years, probably, or seven years before he got there. And, So, yeah, I don't think they were going at the same time, but like I said, I think you could because of the island and people staying on one side or the other for the most part.
Is that the main area where people go? Is it Maui or is there another place? In other words, what if you went to a different island? Would it be as successful?
You could. There is somebody on Kauai now. Kozak has a show.
Oh, that's right. I remember seeing it on Facebook.
John Hirakawa on Honolulu, on Oahu. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's anything that I know of on the Big Island. And then Lanai is just too small.
Mm-hmm.
Maui, they always say Maui no Kauai, which means Maui is the best. Maui, to me, is the best of the islands. It's not too small. It's not too big. It just seems just right.
And mm-hmm.
maybe one of the more popular vacation destination spots. Honolulu gets a lot too, but Honolulu to me looks like Los Angeles on an island. It's just way too big, too crowded, too
Well, that's the main airport is on Honolulu.
The main airport is there. Mm-hmm. I mean, Maui also has a nice airport, but a lot of people fly in Honolulu because you have Pearl Harbor and you get you know, the history of Honolulu.
Right.
But if you go to the beach in Honolulu compared to the beach like in Maui, it's
no comparison.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And we have so many of them.
Yeah.
Nice ones around the island. So, yeah, a lot of people go to Hawaii, you know, and they just go to Honolulu and they come back home. I say, you really didn't see Hawaii, you know. That's my feeling about it. But
yeah, well, Kauai, I think, isn't Kauai the...
Kauai's pretty.
The flowers, what's that called?
It gets
the
more rain.
Okay.
Hawaii, Kauai gets the most rain. It's the wettest, I think it was like they said the wettest place on Earth or something. It gets a lot of rain, and they have beautiful rainforest.
Mm-hmm.
It's also the one that got hit by the hurricane because it's just out there by itself, whereas the others seem to be a little more protected where they are.
Yeah.
So it's very pretty and very lush, but wet.
Yeah.
And it's smaller. So I don't know. For me, I like a little bit more to do, a little bit more of the conveniences, but not as much as Honolulu has.
Yeah. What island is it? And I can't remember even the name of the city, but there was some place that you have to, it's a long way and it's a, and to drive there, it's like a 2-lane road and it's bumpy and it takes you hours to get to the place.
Hana.
Hana. Yeah. The road to Hana.
Yeah, it's on the east side and that is quite a...
Is that Maui?
Quite a trek. That is on Maui.
Okay.
Yeah. And whenever people come visit, you know, we'd always take them there, but it's not something we would do on a regular basis. It just takes too long and the road's real small and sometimes it gets to where it's like two really short lanes and you're going around a curve and if you look down, you know, you can see hundreds of feet of mountain.
And other cars that have fallen.
yeah, probably if you look close enough. So it's an interesting ride. I think if you go to Maui, everybody should do it.
Yeah.
At least once.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty when you get there. It's a big hiking destination.
And Anna,
camp
you're talking
out.
About?
Yeah, you camp out there. They got swimming. They got the seven pools and you can jump off the mountain into these pools. And so handle it with caution. It's a really nice visit. Yeah.
Well, I know there are a lot of places in the volcano. Is that also?
On the Big Island of Hawaii, they have an active volcano.
Okay.
We have a volcano, but it's dormant on Maui. And you can still go up there. People go up there sometimes for sunrise. It's going to be very chilly because you get up kind of high.
Is that where they ski also?
Not on Maui because it's not quite that. On Hawaii, you would have the higher elevation.
Somebody told me that. Somebody said skiing in Hawaii, and I said, "You mean water skiing?" He said, "No, snow skiing."
Yeah, it would have to be on the Big Island. Yeah, Maui's not quite high enough, but you get up to the volcano, and it's very pretty. You can oversee a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
And, on the Big Island, the active volcano is kind of cool because at nighttime you can go there and you can see like the little fires and embers and stuff, and you can walk out there. You know, so far you can actually see where the last volcano like stopped. This was coming down the mountain right down the road.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty interesting, almost like going to Pompeii or something, but this one's active.
Right, right. And you were there, you say, for about 8 years or so?
8 years.
Okay. Yeah. And hopefully might want to go back then, too?
That's the plan.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
okay.
The plan.
I remember you telling me something many years ago, and that Al the Only was going to be moving over to Hawaii.
He's there now.
And, he had moved from
Detroit.
Hamtramck, outside of Detroit up there, and was saying to Lori, his wife, if, you know, I could live any place. I think I can do magic anywhere. And since she said, well, how about, they went to Hawaii and said, well, it's great, let's move. And you had said, well, let me give him some advice. Mm-hmm. Do you remember what that was?
I don't remember what the advice I gave him was, but I mean, I was there when he came and we did hang out some, and he wasn't really working.
Yeah. You said it was difficult for a white person.
Right. That's what, okay. I didn't remember if I told him that, but yeah. And it was. So he still flies back to the mainland all the time to do shows. But as long as he's working, Lori's got a job there too. Mm-hmm. So yeah, they're doing fine. They got a condo on the west side, Lahaina, Kanapali side. That's where Warren and Annabelle's on the west side. And yeah, I just saw Al. I was working Wizards. You mentioned Wizards in Florida, maybe a couple months ago or so. And Al happened to be in town for a gig and came over that night. So yeah, he's doing well, just not on that way with the work.
But I knew. But what you were saying, I think that I found interesting was how that you will experience prejudice on the island after you come and live there. I mean, if you come as a vacationer and you go home, that's fine. We like to take your money. But as a person of color, that it is different than a white person would experience.
Right. Yeah, because you're kind of the outsider there. And yeah, it's just different. It's more of a, because they almost feel like, first of all, I think a lot of the Hawaiians feel like the island was taken.
From them, you know,
You're right.
By white people.
Exactly. Yeah. So there's a little resentment there.
Yeah, still.
Still, yeah. They still want to leave the, they don't want to be a state. You know, you'll see different little groups that'll have a little sign stuck in the ground and they'll have a little meeting where they're, you know, it'll never happen where they get to leave.
Want to secede.
This, right.
Yeah. Same thing with Texas. Texas is not going to secede.
No, it's not, it's not going to happen, but that's how strongly some of them still feel like, you know, it was taken from them. So, So yeah, that does go on. I don't think he has any problem as far as living on the island, but as far as maybe working, it's not.
Yeah, because you're competing for jobs with other people who are local natives.
Right.
And they live there all their lives.
Exactly.
Just because you're moving in, that doesn't make you local.
Yeah. No.
It's got to be tough.
It's tough. So fortunately, he's found work and doesn't mind flying. So yeah, he's got the miles.
Yeah, sure that he does. I also want to talk with you about some of the apps and stuff you've been making now. Of course, the thing that I use and I think everybody should use is ShowQues.
Yeah.
So tell me about the development of ShowQues and what it does.
Well, ShowQues is by far, I've probably done a couple dozen apps, not just for me, but for other people. And ShowQues is by far the biggest one, and it's the most expensive
done,
one.
Mean?
But it's a big, it outsells all the other ones combined because it's something
kinds
everybody
of...
can use. All the other magic tricks or games or other things that I've
sold,
yeah. It's like I said, there's probably two dozen, and
that you have,
and that one that I've created, and that one outsells all the others. That's how big ShowQues is. Mm-hmm. But everybody who does a show. Mm-hmm. Should use music in their show, even if it's just playing people up and down, or
that's right.
your own play on
birthday parties,
so
or anything.
Not using music, whatever it is for your show, you should use music, no matter what kind of show it is. Mm-hmm. And ShowQues is perfect for it. In fact, I was jumping ahead of myself. Go back to the beginning. Sean Pop had asked me one day, he called and said, "What do you think about making a music app?" I go, "You know, to play music during my show."
Yeah.
I go, "Just use the one that comes with the phone." No, I mean that, you know, can fade and, you know, can do other functions, because that one just is pretty basic.
It just plays on and off.
Right.
Yeah.
And a performer needs some other features, so he wanted these other features. So I said, well, okay, I'll look into it. A couple months had passed and I hadn't done anything. And he calls back. And so the second time I thought, all right, let me really look into this. And I started playing with it. And a couple months later, I had the first one done. Mm-hmm. And he was surprised that, you know, I did it that quickly. And I took the ideas that he had, then went even further, just started adding more of my own. And once the first one went online, I started getting ideas from the customers, because they would say, hey, you think it could do this, it could do that? And so I'd start looking at all the different ideas that they would give me, the ones I liked, their thought were worthwhile, I'd put in there, and a lot of them were. So it kept getting better and better and better. And Sean was doing the hardware, the remote. So we had iJet make us a remote control with a little center button that was programmable and a magnetic switch. And we were never totally satisfied with iJet. Sean was having trouble getting a hold of the guy sometimes, and he would be late, and he just didn't seem to be in the quality control as much as we would like. Some people run the iJet, they've never had a problem, and other people can't ever get it to work.
So, I use the iJet, and I'd probably say it works 95% of the time.
That's pretty good, but a lot of people don't have that fortune. So I was working on a ships with a juggler friend of mine, Charles Peachock. And I knew he was a bit of an electronic wizard. And he built one of those pianos where you juggle the balls and it plays songs.
Oh, sure.
I go, well, if you could do that, maybe you could do this. I said, what do you think about, because he knows show cues as well. I said, well, what do you think about building a remote for this? Because we're not happy with the company. And iJet's the number one manufacturer of remote controls for Apple devices in the world.
Yeah.
So if we can't, if we're not happy with them, we got to do something ourselves.
And yeah.
So he said, yeah, I think I can do that. So he spent about 2 years and I don't know how much money, but he got it done. I actually have with me the first one. I'll show it at the lecture tonight.
Okay, cool.
The others should be shipping like in a week, but I've had this for a couple weeks now.
So is that going to be some add-on, something that you can buy?
It's a remote control. Sean will have this on his website as well, conjuringcabinet.com. They sell all the hardware for that.
About the same size as an iJet?
It's about the same size, but it's so much more tactile. Oh. It's got like a 1,000-foot range.
I'm excited to see this.
Yeah, it comes with a DI box, a battery, the AC adapter, a little stand for your iPad or your iPhone.
Oh. Yeah, because I had to buy it.
You had to buy all that separate, right? Mm-hmm. It's all in this one nice case that it comes in. And it's like you have no doubt about when you push a button, it worked. It's very tactile and you can feel it instantly giving you a success. And it's amazing. He spent really a lot of effort and time on developing this and we're really excited about it. And it's a little more expensive, of course, than the iJet, but then it's by far the best remote that is available anywhere.
Now, I have been hearing a lot about Audio Ape.
It's Audio Ape.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
That's Charles Peachock. That's my friend.
Okay.
And the company's Audio Ape remote.
Yeah,
so he's the one that's the one I'll be showing at the...
Okay, I've seen those on Facebook, and I've been wondering what that's about, so...
Yeah.
Good.
I've been sharing them and telling everybody it's on our Facebook page, too. We've been giving it progress. We even did a podcast, video podcast about it, giving it a little demo. And, we've got customers that... He put out a batch of, like, 200 for the first order, and I think all but, like, 40 or 60 of those are already sold. Mm-hmm. So he just wanted to put out the first batch, see how it goes. But a lot of people had pre-ordered because he had a special pre-order price at one time. I don't know what the actual price is now, but I know it's a little bit more pricey than maybe the average birthday party magician wants to spend. But it is your show.
Right.
And if you really care about your show, it's still cheaper than a Minitech or a Showtech or other Happy Amp, other devices that are out there. It's still less expensive and it's the best. And I think anyone who plays with it or sees it would be able to determine that for themselves. And
so it's more than just a remote control switch.
It's the remote with a dock and the DI. It's got like everything you could possibly need. And no matter what your device is with the Apple, whether you're using the 32 pin or the newer whatever the newest one, my mind's fried from driving so long.
Lightning
bolt, yeah.
Yeah.
So whatever adapter you have, it plugs right in. It's a USB plug, so you can always plug your Apple devices into it. And it's perfect. It's just the ideal. So our whole idea was to mend the best software available with the best hardware available and have the best sound system. And I think it will be. We have so many customers with show cues, even before his remote came out, that if I mismade a list, it'd be like a who's who in magic.
Yeah.
Anybody you'd name, that's one of our customers. But you also have some birthday party guys. I have a guy who's Santa Claus, and he has a show cues. I have comics that I work with on the ship. They have it for the music bit that they do. Jugglers. I walked into a ship and I saw a couple of jugglers. And I looked over, I saw an iPad running show cues. I went to the close-up room a few months back, and there's Jeff McBride running show cues.
Uh-huh.
And I was there two months ago. There was Kyle and Misty running show cues. So I see it everywhere I go now.
Yeah, it's got to make you feel good.
And it really is, because, it's nice to put out something that, people can use.
Yeah.
And it's got so many features in it, I don't even use most of them. Mm-hmm. But people have given me the ideas, and I know somebody will use them. And so I put the features in. But for me... it's really just play fade. Whenever I ask somebody to come on stage, I don't like that dead spot.
Right.
So I like the music playing
exactly
as they come up to stage.
Right.
And then I added features. So like if you had a little clip, you said, this is perfect, but I don't know how long it's going to take four people to make it on stage.
Mm-hmm.
So I have it loop and it just keeps playing. And once they get up there, I hit fade.
Sure.
It's gone. It also has a cue sheet feature. And so when I'm on the ships, I don't even run the music myself. It's one less thing I have to do.
Yeah.
I just turn on the cue sheets. And so it takes me like 10 seconds to show the sound man how to run it. Look, play, fade. There's two buttons.
Yeah.
And all you got to do is read.
Yeah.
The cue sheet tells you when to push those buttons. So that's perfect.
I wish I would have taken that advice when I was working the ship last time, that I was insistent on using my own. Uh-huh. And so I don't remember if it was Shoku's or whether I was using Kerry Pollack's. But the point was, it wasn't quite working. And I think it was, again, because of my remote that wasn't working. It
right.
So, because my wife said, that was that guy's job. You should have let him do his job.
But and they love doing it.
Yeah.
Most of the sound guys love show cues, and I've often given them show cues so that they could show it to the other entertainers
sure.
and other people.
So you should be using this. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. exactly. But for them, it makes their job so easy. They don't have to look for CDs. They don't have to, they don't have to do anything except look at the screen.
Right,
and
right.
Two taps. Play, pay.
As far as your background in creating these apps, did you have an engineering background or something, or just kind of...
You know, when computers first came out, personal computers, I got one of the old Coleco Vision things that had the cassette drive.
Sure.
There was no hard drive. There was no floppy. It was
right.
just a cassette.
Yeah.
And I ran into a friend of mine who was a high school principal, I think, at the time, and a magic buff from the magic club I was at the time. And he at his house, he showed me his computer doing a couple of magic tricks. I go, wow, that's really cool. So I learned how to program a couple of magic tricks for my computer. And they were simple, and I had put out disc years ago at a magic convention. I had a booth, and I had Computer Magic and Computer Magic 2, and each had half a dozen magic tricks that the computer would do. Very
yeah.
simple. This was like DOS screens, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it was very,
yeah,
very
sure.
simple. So then I went to Pascal and then Visual Basic and a few other languages, but I had a CPA, one of his clients was a computer programmer. That's what he did for a living.
Mm-hmm.
So he introduced me to him. So I would write some code, and I'd bring the thing over to him, and he'd go, that's great, but now how about this, this, and this? Like, okay, so I'd go home, and I'd implement that, and I'd bring it back thinking now it's done. He'd go, that's good, but now, and he just kept doing this until it would be absolutely perfect. So
right.
he helped the development. So then I started writing shareware programs, and I wrote a database because they didn't have them back then, so I can keep track of all my shows and my clients.
Right, right.
And I wrote a baseball program because my son was playing Little League, and kept track of all the statistics. So a computer magazine or two did some articles on me and my software. So the airports in Indianapolis, Chicago, and Miami, it was the same group. They were going to replace those black and white monitors with color as Windows. I think it was Windows 95 or whatever. Windows, whatever the first one was, came out. Everything wanted to be color now.
Right.
And Denver was going to try and do it too. So these people were trying to race the people in Denver
okay.
to get the first one done. So they see the article about me writing the database program. And they figure, well, it's just what it is. It's a database program. So they call me in. You know, can you do this? And it's like, can you make an elephant disappear? I say yes.
The
and then
yes.
you figure out how to
yeah.
make an elephant disappear.
Yeah.
So I had no idea I could do it, but I gave him a price and said, you know, that's what it'd be. But so they tried two other guys, I guess, and each one of them had failed. So they called me back. Now they said, we want you to do it. And we'll give you twice what you asked for, but we only have 3 weeks to try and beat this other
Denver,
airport
yeah.
and have the first color monitors in airports. So now I figure, I still don't know I can do it, but I know they don't have much choice.
Right.
So I said, well, I'll do it for 3 times what I asked for originally, because now, I have a small window
here. Yeah, compressed window.
And I wanted free flights for a year for me and my family, wherever we wanted to go.
Mm-hmm.
So knowing they had no choice, I figured I might as well go for it.
Sure.
So they said, okay. So I'm programming like almost 24 hours a day for 3 weeks to get this thing done. And it looks like it's working in my house, but I'm not in the airport. You
right.
know, it's going to go for miles. And it's a big airport. We go to Indianapolis' airport. So the night they wire all the new monitors in and I put the software on the server, I have no idea if this is going to work or not.
So fingers crossed, yeah.
Fingers are crossed. They flip everything on. It works. And I'm like, just relieved.
Yeah.
Surprised.
What do you expect, of course.
I know. So it was called UFIDS, User-Friendly Flight Information Display System. And we won. We were the first to put the monitors in color. And, this is a long time ago. I don't remember how long they've been color, but when Windows first came out, so people can go back and remember when that was. But I'm much younger at the time, and not knowing I could even do the job, I thought, well, I did pretty well to get so much money in the flight. But then afterwards, I started thinking, I should be getting paid today for this. I should have worked out some kind of a deal where you get paid residuals.
In perpetuity.
I wasn't thinking about that. I just
a job.
It was a job. You offered enough money. I don't know I can do it. I'll give you a price. It ends up being 3 times what I asked for, so I'm pretty happy. But then, when this time goes on, you go, darn, I should still.
Yeah, because that's all been spent now.
They're everywhere. It's like, yeah.
Yep.
So So that was my computer background. So now Windows. So now the iPhone comes out, and it's yet another language. They use Objective-C. I didn't have C. It wasn't one of my languages. I had like six or seven languages. That wasn't one of them. Mm-hmm. And I'm not feeling like I want to learn another computer language at this point. So I'm going on a cruise the next day. My wife's a bookstore. She wants to get a book. And while she's looking for the book, I happen to see a book on a shelf about programming for the iPhone.
Yeah.
So I pick it up. I'm thumbing through it. And I'm talking to myself out of it. And I definitely don't want to learn this language. And I put she comes by. She's got her book. I put it on a shelf. She goes, why don't you get that? And I said, I don't want to learn another. She said, yeah, just take it with you.
You got time on the ship to.
I got time. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So by the time I got off that ship, I had the first app done. I just kept going. Yeah. Once I got started, I just couldn't stop. I got into it, and that's how I got into the
So how do you come up with the ideas for the apps?
Some of them are people suggest. People suggested a couple of them. Others, the first one I did of any real consequence was No Freaking Way, and I just had the idea of using the phone to find a selected card mm-hmm. without using voice or anything else. And it was pretty diabolical, and so much so that Apple turned me down three times.
Really?
They said it would confuse the users. And I said, well, it's a magic trick. It's supposed to confuse.
Right.
And they didn't go for that. So they turned it down. And then time passes by, and maybe 9 or 10 months, maybe a year. And I see Rising Card by Chris Kenner. And it uses a similar principle. Mm-hmm. I didn't think it was as good, but it was similar enough. I call up Chris. How did you get that through? I tried, yeah. And they turned me down. And he said, well, they turned me down too, but I went to the vice president, I think he told me, of Apple. So I go, all right, well, that's done now. So the next month, Penn and Teller put out this chat app.
Right.
Again, uses similar principle. I don't think it was used as well, but still, it's the same principle. So I'm thinking, all right, David Copperfield, Penn and Teller, maybe you got to be a celebrity to get this. Mm-hmm. And then somebody else puts out an app, and part of it used that as an option that you could use it. So now I write them again, and they reject it. So now I go to the vice president of Apple, and I go, I had this app, and now other people are putting the same basic principle in their apps, and mine's getting rejected. So finally I got through to him, and he got it approved for me. But by then, instead of being first, you're last.
Yeah, you're.
And any money it made some money, but sure. Not what it would have made had it
on the front end
come out. Yeah.
So it's a matter of who you know and who you contact, I guess, within your organization.
Yeah. Well, it didn't even occur to me to go over their heads when they said no. You know.
You thought that was the answer.
I thought that was the end. And Chris was smart enough to go over them.
You probably learned that from David.
Maybe. Maybe it doesn't help. You know, it doesn't hurt to have that name.
Well, that's true too. Yeah.
But no, he was smart and got it done, and then others started getting it done, and so finally I was able to get it through, and then it just kept going. So in the meantime, I had put together another app called AnyCard that used a different principle, one that they were comfortable with and they allowed. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't the No Freaking Way app. So I'm glad they're both on there now. And then yeah, there were just other, some of them I look back at because these are years old now. When the iPhone first came out, some of these, I go, man, I could have done this so much better now.
Or are you thinking about doing some new apps then?
I'm thinking about updating some of them. Some of them I just cringe because it's like, you know, it's like when you made something and you thought,
that's a good idea
really,
at the time.
Yeah, but now you're thinking, this really isn't that good. You know?
Sorry, my name's on that.
Yeah, and my name's on it and I don't really even like it. People are buying it though, so I think I took one down. The others are still up there, even though I don't like some of them.
Yeah.
But some are really good, but there's some that I go, it's just not
good. What do you think about, speaking of apps, that a lot of times I've heard the negative side of it, in which people say, not that's a cool trick or how'd you do it. It's more like, you know, where'd you get that app?
That's why I think I write a column for Vanish where I review all the apps, so mm-hmm. I see a lot of them. I think the ones that are most interesting to me are when the iPhone apparently has nothing to do with the effect, or it's done with their iPhone. Mm-hmm. I think that's much, much stronger because, yeah, now people have a tendency to think, oh, that's just a cool app. Where can I get it?
But if it happens on their phone, that's a good idea.
On their phone, they're really, really impressed. Or if you are using your phone, but it doesn't look like you're using your phone, mm-hmm. or that it's not an app, if it looks like it's Google.
But if you tell them, to go to a certain website or something, you've already got
whatever again. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they're getting really, really clever now, and there are a few people putting out really, really smart stuff.
Like what? Who do you recommend, or what have you seen? Or
Telephoto?
Telephoto, that's what I was going to say.
It's incredible. He just put out a new update of it.
Okay.
It does even more stuff. And again, it doesn't look like it's anything but a phone call.
Right.
And yet the person on the other phone can do one of many things, not just name a card. He can tell you what date you selected, mm-hmm. whether it's a Monday and what time.
Right.
It's got a lot of really clever stuff. And the person you're doing this to would never know that
right.
it was an app.
No suspicion at all
yeah.
whatsoever.
And Mike Phillips over in the UK, he had a couple also that would get their PIN number.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really, really clever. And you could hold on to that information. I mean, you could reveal it right then, but you could also, you ask several questions while you're trying to get this PIN number, which gives you other information that stores on the phone.
Okay.
So I could do something for you one day and then get together for lunch the next month where you've forgotten that mm-hmm. you even mentioned that information. And now I can reveal it. And you're like, how the heck did you know that?
Right.
So, yeah, he's got some clever stuff, too. He works with a developer. I can't think of his name off the top of my head. Sala, something like that. Very clever stuff. So I would look at his as well. But, yeah, Max has what he thinks is like the ultimate, and it might be, mm-hmm. as far as magic apps, because it's incredibly clever. Cleans up after itself. There's no trace, nothing for anybody to find.
Are you talking about Telephoto?
Telephoto,
yes,
yeah.
Yeah, I've got that app.
Yeah,
as well, because it's not only for the iPhone but for the Droid as well. So it's just is nice. Then too, I've been my friend Boris, my pet Boris, the spider.
That's a favorite for me.
Yeah,
because it's like doing what was the one that Jim Price did?
Jim Pace. Yeah.
Jim Pace. Yeah, that's where it was based.
Correct.
That's where it came from. And so when they turn over their hand and there's either a cockroach or a spider on the back of the hand. I have seen some amazing reactions.
Oh, absolutely.
I wished I had videotaped them. Yeah. They were that good, where they are just jumping up and down and freaking out.
And then they want you to show it to their sister or somebody
right,
else.
Right, right. The
so
web.
Could see
that was,
the web, right.
The web was the first one. And he's just a nice guy, but it's a great app.
Mm-hmm.
And we had talked when he was developing the app, and I remember giving him some ideas that I think he has my name listed there somewhere, but I just thought it was brilliant. His the little cockroaches. I like the cockroach better than the spider. It just seems to freak people out a little bit more.
I do not like the butterfly.
That's too.
When I've done
not
that,
as threatening.
Exactly. I've done the butterfly, and when they turn their hand over, they go, "Oh."
Right. No reaction.
That's
to
nice.
Speak of. Yeah. But the cockroach gets an amazing reaction. They kind of start reacting when they see it on the screen because it's scrolling on a picture of their hand.
Yeah.
And they go. They're just kind of thinking ahead of time, like, I don't want to see that.
I hope
thing.
That's not going to be on my hand.
Yeah, I go, it's just the screen. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then when I tell them to turn their hand over and wave it over the screen and they see that thing on their hand, oh my gosh.
That's why you need to carry a couple of those things because those things go flying across
the
room.
Yeah. You have to hope you're holding on to your phone when they freak out because
I do.
It'll go, it would go flying. It's a pretty cool moment. Mm-hmm. You got to do it for the right person. You can't get somebody with a heart condition or, you have to be smart about who you pick to do this for. But it's a great effect, so I like that a lot, too.
It is.
There's one I haven't done a whole lot, but you should look it up, where they name any song and the artist,
mm-hmm.
and then the prediction you've made on their phone with YouTube.
Yeah.
So after they've decided on the person that they want, they look at it, and that's the song playing on their phone.
I saw that one also. Isn't that also the same guy who did Telephoto? This rings a bell. I think
Telephoto
I
is Max, right? That's Max Krause. He didn't do that one. I'd have to look it up. I can't remember because I get so many of these apps sent to me that I don't remember who did what.
Yeah.
But
hold on a moment.
Oh, yeah. The apps, basically.
But, Max Krause, I know, is another one who develops a lot of apps and things then, too. So there are several guys out there who got some really good ideas and stuff.
Yeah, there's a lot of great stuff that doesn't look like it's an app, and that's what's really cool about it. And because you don't want them to suspect that it's an app. You want them to, you want to take credit for it rather than the app.
Than the app. You know, I saw something recently that was a download from Murphy's Magic, and essentially it was where you would, I want to say it was with a coin or it might have been a folded card, but basically you have the card to phone app mm-hmm. on there, so this way that you incorporate that in conjunction with the rest of a trick. So that's almost kind of immaterial in which that the person would hold the phone and you pull that out, basically, and then you continue with the trick. So,
yeah, nice ways to integrate it.
Yes.
And I had written BizCard a long time ago where it produced your business card.
Right.
And I remember Dan Garrett doing it for someone and the person wanted to know how many business cards the iPod held. That was great.
That's funny. That's funny. Well, I tell you, as we start to wrap up over here then, too, I think one last thing that probably could be a whole another podcast having to do just with restaurants. I know that you worked other restaurants and cruise ships, and there are so many different directions that we can go and everything. And didn't I think you got a, I know you do. I've got a copy of your book, and I think it was in Hawaii that you put that out on.
Right, Magic for Maui.
Magic for Maui. And that was all on restaurant type of
stuff. Absolutely. Yeah, the lecture will be on that as well.
That's what I was going to say. The stuff that you're going to be talking about mainly right now on your lecture is.
Right, with, restaurant work.
Right.
Get it, how to work it once you've got it, and the type of routines that work best.
Now you're going to be doing something then with Real Magic, and by the way, Cosmo says hello.
Oh yeah, tell him I said hi. Yeah, that's coming up right after this lecture tour.
Yeah, yeah. I think by the time that this gets posted, it may be already passed, but I'm going to be promoting this a little bit. Is this also along the same lines of the things you're talking about in the lecture?
It'll also be Restaurant Magic, similar to the lecture, but updated, because the DVDs that I have now actually used to be VHS tapes.
Yeah.
And that stuff still works. You know, I mean, it's still great. But over time, you start thinking of other ways to maybe enhance routines. And I'll try and draw on anything that may have developed over the time and record it. Plus, it's nice to have a fresh recording of stuff that was recorded probably in the early 90s. Like I said, the information is still very valid. It's just, it'd be nice to have a good quality new DVD with any little nuances that have creeped in.
Restaurants haven't changed for the most part as far as the work or getting the work. And I think that there have been several books that have been out, and I think that we don't need more than two or three, that because the rest seem to be a rehash of everything else. Was it a Kirk Charles, I thought, had an excellent book that was out. Because that talked about the business of restaurant magic, and I think Jim Pace had one out as well.
Yep.
So beyond that, the information between the two, I don't know, it really moves that forward. However, that there could be and should be more books like yours that actually says, okay, well, now you have the job. Here are the tricks to do, because people say, okay, what can I do at the restaurant?
Right.
You know,
and even the way I worked them, and like I'll talk about tonight upon request, and how I set that up with the restaurant, and how the waiters would introduce me, and the whole thing was just set up a little differently than people just walking in and saying, you want to see some magic. They don't know who you are. Do you work there? Is this any good? How long is it going to stay at the table? What's it going to cost? There's too many. You're asking a question, you didn't give them, they don't have enough information to answer it, so you will likely sometimes, maybe often, get no. And then that becomes contagious when the other tables see that. So
Right,
I solved that problem, and I
the way I solve that is I never ask that question. I don't say, do you want to see magic?
That's the worst question you can ask.
The last, not even the last thing. That's a question I would ask, because you don't want to ask a question where the possibility could be no.
Yeah, exactly.
And so it's not like, can I show you some magic? Well, no, get away. You know,
exactly.
There are so many things that you can say when you're walking up to the table and saying, well, the management has requested that I come. So then it's kind of like, I'm not doing my job if, you know, and then I'm going to get demoted if, you know, and it's going to be your fault because you don't let me work at your table, you know.
Well, that's exactly what I would do if I was working like a cocktail party, because the restaurant, they know I'm there. But if I'm doing a cocktail party and you're strolling, they don't know who you are. So what I would always say is, hey, my name's Carl. I've been sent here to entertain you for a few moments. So they don't know who sent me. It could be their boss.
Exactly.
And now I told them for a few moments. So they know I'm not going to be staying.
You're not
going to be watching 30 card tricks, right? So it gives them all the information they need. His name's Carl. Somebody sent him to entertain us for just a few moments. Perfect.
I love Dan Garrett's introduction where he says, excuse me, my name is Dan Garrett. I'm a professional interrupter. How am I doing?
Yeah. That's funny. Yeah.
Yeah. Good opening. Well, as we do start to close over here, the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word Podcast. So my question then, Carl, to you is, what is your magic word or phrase, or what is it that is your philosophy of life? What's important to you?
Fun.
Just
enjoying what I do and letting others enjoy it, seeing the way I enjoy it. I think enjoyment and fun is kind of contagious. And so if you enjoy it and they sense that you really enjoy what you do, they're going to enjoy what you do.
Perfect. Yeah, that's great. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Carl Andrews, and this is Scotty out. Well, that was fun and enlightening. I know that you listeners will join me in thanking Carl Andrews for being my guest as he passed through Houston and took a little bit of time to sit behind the microphone and chat for a while. And also, I know that you want to thank him for donating the gifts which we are awarding as prizes in this week's contest.
He has given us two copies of each of two DVDs. That's a total of four DVDs. One of them is called Making a Living, Performing Close-Up Magic, and the other is No Jacket Required, Magic from Maui. And we will be awarding those prizes to four random lucky winners. And all you have to do is to scroll to the bottom of the blog for this podcast and enter the contest. If you reside in the U.S., then we will send it to you free domestic shipping. However, if you live outside of the U.S., then we will notify the winners and let you know that if you want to pay for the foreign shipping, then you can. And if not, then we will just draw another name. And because it is free shipping, that is due in large part because of the Friends of the Magic Word who so generously give their financial donations to the Magic Word podcast in order to help defray our costs. And speaking of prizes and of winners, I want to announce the winners of last week's contest, and that is a copy of the booklet by Rick Heath called Magician with a Paintbrush, which was a booklet that accompanied the speech that he gave at the IBM regarding his work as an artist for LeGrand David for 20 plus years. And the winners are Richard Nunziato and Dale Rabin. Congratulations, guys. Those booklets will be going out to you shortly. And if you have not yet liked our Facebook page for the Magic Word Podcast, now is a perfect time to go do it. We are utilizing their new live streaming function, which will allow us to record live video as I am recording the audio portion for the podcast, which will let you then in real time ask questions. You can just type questions on there and we'll read the questions, and that way it won't just be me asking questions for our guest, but it'll be you. And so you'll be given notice if you have liked our page to let you know when these live streams are coming up and when they're going to be available. Well, we're out of time. We've got a lot of stuff in the future to talk about. We've got some great guests coming up, and I'll tip one right now. That's going to be next week. We will release the podcast with Gay Blackstone. It's a pretty good podcast. Not that pretty good. This is a great podcast. I know. I've already heard it. So I think you guys will enjoy it then, too. So we're out of time for now, and until next week, stay well, get booked, and have fun. This is Scotty out.